Well, it was an opportunity that I couldn't hardly pass up. Our brother Glenn, he, for whatever reason, they opened up his schedule. That's the reason why he's here tonight. So I trust that the Lord has prepared something for us truly to hear. So I hope and pray that your hearts and mind are attentive to our brother Glenn Orsted as he presents his thoughts tonight. Are you going to?
Yeah. It's not anything too in-depth, but you can sit if you want. Well, thank you, Gordon. Good evening, everyone. I noticed Gordon moved over, kind of bounced a little bit. I feel like we should kind of like lean a little bit to the south there. But before we begin, I'm going to put something up here on the board. For those that might be listening at a later date to this recording, I've just written a number on the board, and that number is 97,760. During the course of this evening, you're going to have a couple opportunities to determine how long this sermon is. It'll be really short, about average, it'll be really long. Your first opportunity to shorten it is right now. If you can tell me the significance of that number and how I'm going to apply it to the message tonight, we can shorten it down a whole lot. No, I don't know. Okay, we've lost the short version. We're going to have to go at least to medium. All right? I didn't anticipate a response to that, so I was prepared for the average sermon. Now, you still have the opportunity to keep it from going long, and I think you have a better shot at this one a little bit later. Now, that number is going to figure in my sermon, but you're not going to find out why for a while. So you can sit there and just kind of look at it, and you're going to have no idea what it has to do for a little bit. But as I start tonight, I do feel that I have been impressed with the message, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here this night. I'd like to start kind of posing a question for everyone here. Is there anyone here this evening that have not at some time in your life, or possibly currently, you know, experienced some trial or challenge in your life? And by that I mean anything. It can be, you know, an illness, you know, a serious illness that you've been facing with, some financial concern that's come up in your life, you know, maybe the loss of a loved one, the loss of a job. We've had individuals that have been struggling to find and trying to find employment, maybe marital problems, issues in your family. I mean, is there anyone here tonight at some time, either currently or sometime in your life, you haven't had some trial or challenge that you've had to deal with? And, you know, and I don't see any hands. And I didn't expect to, because we all have something at some time in our lives that we're going to have to deal with, that are difficult, that we may have to make hard decisions. It's a part of our life. And it should be significant that when I say that, everyone here, you look around, you don't see any other hands coming up, because everyone here sometimes has had some time in their life, and maybe multiple times, maybe currently, you know, have something that's really trying them, you know, that it's just a difficult time in their life. And it's important for us to realize that sometimes when those things happen, we feel like we're the only ones. But when I ask that question, everyone in here didn't raise their hand. And so it's important to look around and realize, you know, everyone has those problems. The person sitting next to you, in front of you, or behind you may have a different problem, but nonetheless, it's a trial. And maybe some of the things that the person next to you, in front of you, behind you, struggles with isn't a problem for you, and yet what you struggle with might be a difficulty for them. So that's why I like us to consider tonight. When we encounter those trials, those difficulties, those trying times in our lives, how do we react to them? How are we supposed to react? And hopefully when I'm done tonight, maybe give us a little bit of perspective or the way to kind of get our minds and our attitudes set that to help us to be able to be more prepared to be able to handle those things. Now, once again, I'd ask you, I'm not looking for any show of hands this time, but, you know, ask yourself, when those things happen, what are some of the thoughts sometimes when you're going through those? You know, why is it happening to me? You know, that's probably pretty common. You know, why, of all the people, why am I having to go through this? You know, when's it going to end? How long is this going to go on? How long am I going to have to endure? Maybe sometimes you kind of look around, it looks like things are going pretty well for everyone else, and why is it so easy for everyone else, and why am I having all these problems? And that's why I want important. I want to see a show of hands that if you feel those ways sometimes, you know, no one raise their hand here, because sometime in their life, everyone here in this room have had a trial that's come up in their life. And you're probably going to have more. And so that's normal. It's part of life. But then it makes it difficult, I think, sometimes, you know, when we're dealing with those things, sometimes there's individuals that write things like we read like this. You know, James in the first chapter, verses 2 through 4. James chapter 1, I'm going to start at verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. You know, you look at that word temptations, it means trials, you know, things that are really going to attack your faith and stuff. And you're like, how can someone write something? Oh, count it all joy when I have to encounter these things. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptation, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Well, before I'm done tonight, I hope to make us consider maybe our perspective when we look at these things when they occur to us, to help us that we can sincerely say those things just like James did, that we can say that we can encounter those things with joy. Because we really should be able to, if our perspective's right, if we understand God's word and we understand what we're going through. And that's my point that I'm going to try to get through tonight and maybe use some examples to maybe help us think a couple of things that maybe we don't realize all the time. Because it's difficult when you're in the situation to kind of drop back and remember those things. And so that's what I'm going to try to do tonight. Is there anyone here that has never watched some sporting or competitive event? Talking, you know, football, basketball, baseball, soccer, tennis, the Olympics, golf, a chess tournament, you know. There's anyone here who's never watched any type of competitive event at all? Okay, we've all done that. At some point or other, some more than others, some more dedicated to it than others, but at some point we've all watched some type of competitive event. It could be auto racing, it could be any of those things. And so let me ask you, when you watch these things, do you normally associate yourself with a person or a team that's there? Is there one that you really want to win, to come out on top? You probably do. Probably wouldn't watch it very much if there wasn't one that kind of had your bias. So why do we do this? You're watching, let's just say, a football game. Two professional teams. Unless you're wagering on it, and I don't encourage that, but that does happen. Unless you're wagering on the outcome, do you really benefit from whichever team wins? Same thing. Do you really suffer if your team loses? If the team that you're rooting for or the athlete that you're behind or you're backing suddenly wins, do you get a pay raise? Do you suddenly get a new car? Does the cloudy, rainy day suddenly become sunny? No. Nothing really changes in our life, does it? Materially, anyways. And so why do we associate ourselves with one particular team or a particular athlete or something? Well, it's generally because there's something there that we feel a part of. We somehow associate with it. Whether it's our nation in the Olympics, you know, the ones that are representing the United States because they're from our country. Or our state, our city, our school, a school we attended. Perhaps you're going to, you know, a high school game. It's a school you've gone to. Someone in your family is involved in it. Someone that you're familiar or you know. Maybe it's a team from one area that you grew up in. Any number of reasons, but usually there's some reason you want to associate and feel part of something that's going on there. And why? So why does it become important, that when? Well, because really, in our minds, you know, it really reflects on that image of whatever's associating with us, doesn't it? We think it reflects, you know, when the United States wins in the Olympics. You know, it reflects on our nation. Whether it's a sporting team on the state, the city, the school it represents, or if it's someone from your family or someone you personally know, somehow you think that it kind of reflects on that image that you have. And so what really makes someone really a great athlete or a champion in our eyes? Think about that. You know, some team, some individual or something that you've watched and maybe repeatedly, you know, somehow just may have made them really stand out from the rest. Is it usually someone who gets really easy victories that they just kind of, everything goes their way all the time? There's no real challenge to it? Or is it someone who somehow makes the great play? Who, when all the odds are stacked against him, somehow rises to the challenge and finds that extra strength or that determination or the skill or the cunning or whatever it's going to take, that extra little edge that makes them move out and above everyone else? Do athletes have it easy? Do they have to overcome obstacles? Do they have to discipline themselves to get there? Do things go wrong? Are there things that hinder them from trying to obtain their goal? Yeah, if it's competitive, there's someone there actively trying to stop them from being the winner. There's someone else who wants to come out on top. There's someone who's trying to prevent them from being the winner. That's what makes it a competition. That's what adds to the excitement of the outcome. It's not certain. Do they sometimes fail? Yes. Are they sometimes injured? Frequently. Are there sometimes fatalities? Yes. But we're watched and we're drawn into this. We're drawn into this competition and the excitement of the outcome, and somehow we associate ourselves with that. And I ask you tonight, so sometimes have you ever fantasized, you know, being a great athlete and all the fame and the fortune and all the, maybe not the fame and fortune, you know, that come on, but, you know, you've somehow thought about what it would be like to be this great athlete in whatever competition, you know, whether it's in the Olympics or some professional sporting event or something, you know, to be able to do something like that. Well, I want us to think about that tonight. If you've ever had a desire to do that, because I want to put before you tonight that every one of you has that opportunity. Here's your next chance to make this sermon a little bit shorter. And I'm hoping you're going to jump on this one. Is there anyone here that is not at least remotely familiar with the story of Job? You've never heard of Job. You've never heard sermons about him. Because, okay, if no one's raising their hand, I can assume there's a basic understanding and I won't have to go through the whole story. I can just hit some highlights. Guess what? You just moved from the long version now. You lost the short version up here, but we've now gone from the long version to the average version. So we're back on schedule for the evening. But you know, Job starts off here in the first chapter. I'm going to read verses 8 through 12. Job chapter 1, starting at verse 8. And it says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, All that he hath is in thy power, only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. We have two opposing forces here, don't we? And I'd like you to consider this night that Job was going to be the Lord's champion. He's going to have this opportunity to come out victorious. No different than an athlete that's going to go on the field where there's someone in opposition. He's going to have to overcome. He's going to have to hone his skills. He's going to have to stay dedicated. So is Job going to have. He's going to have that opportunity. You know, I started this night, have you ever had any, and I gave a whole list of difficulties, and I didn't list them all. Probably you may be sitting here thinking of some trial that's coming to your life I didn't list, and it wasn't intended to be inclusive. But whatever you've gone through, there's a very good chance Job not only has gone through that, but everything else, hasn't he? Did Job lose his health? Yeah. Did he lose his possessions? Yes. Lose family members? Yes. Friends? Yes. His relationship with his wife get tried? Yes. Did he feel forsaken by the Lord? Yes. Job really is the ultimate example of everything that we can encounter in this life. He encountered all thrown upon him. But you know what? It was with a purpose, to glorify God's name. God had confidence in Job. He was going to be his champion. Is there anyone here that does not believe that Job was, in our sense, a biblical hero? God's champion? Did God's image not shine through Job when he endured these things and he refused to curse God? He wished his own life would end. He felt that he couldn't endure it, but he wouldn't curse God. In fact, he would say, if we jump over into the 19th chapter, Job chapter 19, let's start with verse 25. Job 19, verse 25. For I knoweth that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms, destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. But ye should say, why persecute we him, seeing the root of the matters is found in me? But ye be afraid of the sword, for the wrath bringeth the punishments of the sword, that ye may know there is a judgment. And as we continue through the story, as Satan puts these one thing after another upon him, and finally, in the 42nd chapter, verse 12, says, so the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. The Lord blessed him. He had more possessions and he had more abundance, and he lived a long life after that. And so I put before you this night that when those trials of life come upon you, do we consider them the opportunity to be God's champion, that his image can be seen and we can shine through, we can make his image shine in our example of how we handle and we react to these situations. You know, I think that's why James could say that thing, because, you know, have joy in all these things, because it's an opportunity that's put before you. Do you consider yourself, when those things are happening, and no different than Job, that the Lord is standing there saying, look at this righteous servant of mine that I have faith and confidence in, that no matter how much Satan buffets you, he's confident in you. You know, I think that attitude is what really helps us to realize these things, that when we're in those things, we have the opportunity to see how we're going to react and how strong we're going to stand. Rather than, why has this happened to me? I think that's what James was talking about. He said, you know, count it all joy. And it's an attitude we have to have, or else it'll tear us apart. And so I'd ask you, now, what really, our life is multifaceted. There's many responsibilities we have, and we do many things. And everyone here is going to have a little bit different interactions and dealings and deal with different people than the person sitting next to you or behind you. But overall, probably for the majority of people, what is going to be our greatest arena? I say arena, I mean for us to be in this competition, to be God's champion. Well, what is this weekend? The holiday? Labor Day. I got this number up here on the board, 97,760. It's a big number. Some here might like to see that on their W-2 form at the end of the year. Some might like to have that in their pocket right now. It's an interesting number. It's an important number. Why? Well, if you work from age 18 to 65, 40 hours a week, you will put in 97,760 hours in the workplace. Work more hours, you're going to put in longer than that. And some may not. But if you go from age 18 to 65, and you do 40 hours every week, and you're 65, that's how many hours you all spent in the workplace with coworkers. Many of us that work full-time realize quite quickly we spend more time with our coworkers than we probably do with our families. Sad to say. Time I get up in the morning, I make the drive into town, I do my work and all the extra things, and I come home, you know, I get home, it's about time for dinner, read some stuff with the kids, and they're going to bed, a little extra time with the wife, and then it's time to get to sleep and start the thing all over. And I spend more time with my coworkers than I do with my family. But we have to work. It's necessary. You know, really, work is God's theater. It's his movie screen, if you will. And the main attraction is you. You're the star of the show wherever you go. The world's going to watch you and make some decisions if you profess your Christianity. And it's going to, whatever workplace you're in, their example is going to be you. Work is where the Christian is really on display. You know, we're really not shining an example, if you will, here. I mean, we are, but everyone here believes the same. We're not really standing out here. You know, we shouldn't be. We should be very much alike here. We should share a lot of common morals and goals and objectives. We should have a lot of similarities when we come in here. But our differences and our ability to shine really is going to be in the workplace. And anywhere we go different. I mean, it could be the shopping center, it can be school. But my example is, for most of us, most of our contact where we're going to have a long-term exposure with people repeatedly over and over outside our faith is going to be the workplace. Generally, the world doesn't consider work a very, at least here in the United States, you know, something really of great esteem, do they? You've probably seen the bumper stickers on the car. I owe, so it's off to work I go. How can I soar with eagles when I work with turkeys? I'm so broke I can't pay attention. You know, and any number of these things and stuff, you know. And when you go into work, you're going to have stresses. Tension, there's going to be tests upon you. You have deadlines to face, demands that are put upon you. But it's in the workplace where the world really gets to see one of the Lord's followers and disciples in action. It's the opportunity when everyone else is being troubled for you to be happy. And further say, you know, why doesn't that bother him or her? When everyone else is complaining about work, you can be there diligently working hard, trying to do a good job and be worthy of your pay and produce a good product or a good service or whatever you're there for. And our work is really our opportunity to witness, or probably our greatest opportunity. And so what's before us is really a matter of perspective, isn't it? You know, a workplace can be a place of drudgery and pain, or a place of worship and devotion. Have you considered that? You know, when you go in a workplace, considering a place of worship and devotion, a place where you have the opportunity to be an example, that people can see God's image. Ephesians 6, starting with verse 5. Ephesians 6, let's start with verse 5 and go through verse 9. It says, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. And then in Colossians chapter 3, I'm going to read verses 22 through 24. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. You know, and whatever we do, God can use us to draw people unto towards his Son. You know, everything we touch, we should consider sacred and set apart for the Master's use. That's all an opportunity. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you're working at Burger King or IBM. It doesn't matter if you have a job that generally the world looks down upon as a lower position or one they hold in esteem. So I believe the Holy Spirit exhorts us, encourages us, and teaches us, you know, to use all those opportunities. And I don't want to discount any of the others. I mean, wherever those opportunities arise, but particularly today, a weekend that we're having Labor Day, and really, the workplace is the place that we're going to have the greatest long-term contact with individuals. You may run into someone in the store, have a brief few minutes. In school, you'll have them for a semester. Maybe you'll have a long-term friendship. But really, the workplace, you can work there for years with the same people. And the reality is, you know, everything we get is from God. And so we are given 97,760 hours that He's invested in each and every one of you in your time in the workplace. Tells us, you know, here, those verses I read, you know, obey your masters. Perhaps you think you have it difficult in your workplace. But the individuals that these were being written to were slaves. At least many of them. It's estimated, you know, the Roman Empire, there's at any given time, there could be as many as 6 million slaves. At the height of prosperity, you know, the Romans' goal were that they didn't have to do any work at all. They had slaves from all their conquerors and individuals that build all the buildings, maintained everything. And if you're a slave under that, you were considered property. Totally up to your master to how well or how poorly you're going to be treated. and many were treated horribly. Many were treated worse than the livestock that the master owned. Punishment was up to the owner, even unto death. And so Paul writes to these individuals, you know, wholeheartedly, saying, obedient to your masters. As I stand here to the ones I'm speaking this night, you know, it's hard for us really to even imagine living under circumstances like that with the freedoms and the opportunities that we enjoy. You know, they worked in unsafe, unhealthy, and unclean conditions. You know, they were asked to do the hardest, the cruelest work, the things that no one else wanted to do or would do. But they're still commanded to be followers of Jesus Christ and be obedient. And so I translate today to employees, you know, be obedient. Do your job to the best of your ability, as long as it isn't immoral, doesn't go against God's laws. Do the job that you've been asked to do for the pay that you've been promised. You know, it's easy to get caught up in all the water cooler gossip or banter, if you will. You know, the gossip, did you hear about so-and-so? Did you know this was going, did you go back on? You know, the complaining. Did you know that this, did you know they're planning on? Have you heard what they're thinking about doing now? You know? The murmuring, you know, I just can't stand my boss. I can't, you know, I've just about had it. If he says one more time, you know. The laziness. Well, they're not paying me enough, you know. I'm going to give them exactly what they're paying me for, you know, which is about an hour's worth of work. You know. Thievery. You know, those in the workplace that, you know, they're somehow always end up with things they're missing and they always seem to end up with them. You know, everyone has a reputation. And they've changed names over the years. You know, they always have these buzzwords and new titles and stuff, and I'm not sure what they're currently being called. But, you know, particularly in today's economy where companies are trying to be as efficient as they can and, you know, trying to make, you know, every dime count and get the most of everything. They're kind of a rise of what they used to call efficiency experts. I'm not sure if they still call them that or not, but you know, they come in to evaluate and see where we can be more efficient and eliminate waste and stuff. If you read any of them that do that type of work, you know, usually one of the first things they do is watch. They'll come in not wanting to know what they are, pose as a new employee or something else, and they're going to watch and just see what's going on. Because most of us say, you know, in every group of employees and stuff, you're always going to identify there's always going to be at least one gossip, one complainer, one murmur, one lazy person, and a thief. And all they have to do is sit and watch, and they can identify these. But the reality is, whether there's an efficiency expert there or not, we're always being watched. God's always watching, but whether we realize it or not, we are always being watched. And people are making assumptions, opinions, and we are developing a reputation. It can be beneficial or a detriment. But generally they find there's always things they can, when they do these assessments, there's things, you know, as far as the process and production and stuff they can find, you know, and maybe speed things up. One of the things that always comes up, they always can, the ones that are really good stuff, they always say they can identify that although they always have these tendencies of these natural tendencies in people, but just one strong, ethical, hardworking, honest person can bring everything else in line. It's just one person will stand up and say something's wrong, it'll improve. If one person will say, well, no, we've got a lot of work to do. We've got to buckle down and get this stuff done. Things improve. That really one person really can make a huge change. And that's one of the things they identify, you know, that the quality of a good leader can change the whole department. And that leader can be the person appointed as a manager, or it can just be a regular individual, just part of the group, someone who's going to step into the role of leadership. And he can set the course for success. You know, it's unfortunate that in the world scheme, that individuals that identify themselves as Christians frequently are known as things other than being loyal, honest, and trustworthy. You know, our brother Andy in his sermon not too long ago, and I've experienced the same thing. People that I'll sit there with, and they'll talk about regular attending church and the great sermon they've heard, and then you'll turn around and you'll just hear the things come out of their mouth that you're like, I'm just floored, you know. They'll do things that I'll turn around, I expect this from non-Christians, but I mean, someone who's professing these beliefs, it just shocks me. And so the opinion of Christ comes by that image, unless there's somewhere else or someone else to give a better or more accurate or more appealing image. The world sees work as a curse, an irritation. Why? They're living under the effects of the curse, the fall of man. So you remember back in the Garden of Eden, you know, even before the fall, Adam worked. He had responsibilities and things to do. Both before and after his fall into sin, he had responsibilities. Before the fall, you know, from what I gather, doesn't go a whole lot of detail, but from the change that came afterwards, I would assume that work was fun, was exhilarating, exciting. After the fall, probably could still have some of those elements, but suddenly it could also be horrible, hard, and miserable. And so what made the difference? Well, Adam's relationship. With God, work was purposeful and meaningful. Without God, it becomes meaningless and without purpose. It's like those verses I read. The world seeks eye service or to please man. Private encounter those individuals, you know, when the boss is there, you know, they're the greatest employee. They're everything out there. As soon as the boss is gone, you know, the magazine's out, the feet are up on the desk, or they're off taking care of personal business, any number of things. Or the ones who are just seeking to, you know, benefit themselves. You know, they're climbing the corporate ladder. And they'll do whatever it takes. You know, they'll destroy you, they'll lie about you, they'll do whatever it takes so that they can get up and above. And can we get caught up in that? Sure. We can get caught up in anything that we don't keep our barriers up and we don't keep ourselves aware about. You know, I remember our brother Don sometime, you know, he talked about, you know, his lifestyle, and then he went in the Coast Guard, and pretty soon he finds himself picking up those same habits of all those people around him that so shocked him when he first got there. And I found myself in that same circumstances. That if I'm not careful, those things start to creep into my life. I always have to be reassessing myself, examining myself. You know, in James, I get ahead of myself, Luke, Chapter 21. Luke chapter 21, verses 34 and 35. It says, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare it shall come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth." These are the words of Christ. They're in red letters. He says, take heed. He says, that day come upon you unaware. These snares are going to be there upon all the face of the whole earth. They're going to be there. And so I want to kind of give us an example of these athletes to maybe just kind of think a little bit of this. These things that happen in our lives is the opportunity to challenge, to be challenged, to rise up maybe our competitive spirit to be God's champion. The one that stands out, the one that's recognized, the one who's different, you know, the one who if you get the ball to can get to the goal. The one who has a dedication that in the race he's going to get there and he's going to finish. He's going to endure the pain. He's going to have the dedication in his life, the discipline it takes to have those physical skills to be able to accomplish this. We should be able to do the same thing in our spiritual skills, that we have the strength, the wisdom, the discernment to recognize things that are wrong, and the courage to stand up and not to become victim to it, and not to follow along with the crowd, but to be the leaders, to set the morals, to set the standards. I believe it's understanding that opportunity that allowed James to write those verses, like when I started, where it says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptation, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing." That you can be content with that opportunity and the victory. I believe Paul understood that quite well. You know, Paul went through many things. Imprisoned, beaten, shipwrecked, persecuted. And yet as his days were ending, he could write, as we read here in 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4, starting with verse 7. "I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but to all them that also love his appearing." There's an old fable, many of you may have heard. I've heard it in the past. But it's a fable about an elderly man who's traveling along with a boy and a donkey. As they walked through a village, the man was leading the donkey and the boy was walking along behind. The townspeople said the old man was a fool for not riding. So to please them, he climbed up on the donkey and began to ride. When they came to the next village, the people said the old man was cruel to let the child walk while he enjoyed the ride. So to please them, he got off and he set the boy on the donkey's back. And they continued on their way. In the third village, the people accused the child of being lazy for making the old man walk. And the suggestion was made that they both ride. So the man climbed on and they set off again. In the fourth village, the townspeople were indignant at the cruelty to the donkey because he's being forced to carry two people. And the frustrated man was last seen carrying the donkey down the road. Now, it's a humorous story, and we smile about it. But it makes a good point. We are never going to be able to please everybody. If you're going about in life trying to make people like you and your decisions, no matter what you do, someone else isn't going to like it. Someone else is going to think you're wrong. Someone else is going to think there's a better way to do it. And that's why we need to remember that there's really only one that we need to please. And that's our Lord and Savior, who laid down his life for us. Who's asked us what he wants us to do. And said, you know, "If you love me, you'll keep my commandments." And I'd say if you love him, you know, that you'd have a desire to show the effect that he's had in your life, the morals that he's instilled within you by your decisions, your actions, your conduct, and all your doings. You know, I don't want to limit this to the workplace, but being Labor Day, and really that's probably where we have the greatest impact. I want to kind of focus upon that and get us to think about that, because it is the one place where we're probably going to have the greatest contact with people for a long period of time, where they can get more than just a 30-second opinion of us. And then when things are going wrong, and whatever it is in your life. It can be in the workplace, coworkers, a difficult boss, in your personal life, health concerns, financial things. You've lost a job. You've lost a loved one. You have a loved one suffering with some terminal illness. Any number of things. That rather than getting down, thinking, why me? When is this going to end? That, like James said, count it a joy. Because now you have your greatest opportunity to shine and react differently than the world that has no hope through Jesus Christ. You know, I work in a position where I deal with a lot of sorrow and grief. I investigate fatal traffic collisions. And I have the opportunity on a regular basis to see how people handle devastating news. And there's a huge difference between those who have a Christian faith and have a hope of something beyond this life and those that think this is all they have. I mean, it's beyond ability to describe, you know, the wailing and the hopelessness that they have in their life. And that's the opportunity we have that when things are going wrong in life to show that we have hope. There is a light within us that comes through our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, that we can deal with these things and we can rise to the opportunity. No different than you take enjoyment, if you will, or a moment of entertainment when some athlete does some great accomplishment and pulls off the impossible and does that great play. We have that same opportunity to be God's champion. And the one in the difficult times, no different than Job had, to rise up that situation, remain faithful and steadfast, and never curse God, and always do what's right. And wait for our ultimate reward at the end. Because really that's what we're about. It's not what we're going to get out of this life. Because this is all going to pass away. You know, this mortal body is going to get sick, it's going to get old, it's going to die. This world we live in, God has a better plan. This world's going to pass away too. There's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. These things are all going to pass away. Our hope is in something beyond that. And so that's my thoughts tonight. Maybe to help us kind of realize that when those things happen, if we put in that perspective that, you know, really, like Job, there is an opposition. There is an opposition. And we have this opportunity, these things happen, to show what we're really made of, to show who our strength comes from, to be God's champion, to be his prized athlete, to be the one that can overcome these things and keep pushing when you feel like you don't have any strength left. Dig down and find something more. That when the world's negative and bitter, you can have a smile on your face and have something good to say. That's all said and done when we read, like in Matthew 25:21, it says, his Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Thank you.